Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So, last week I left the Labour Party, which I have supported for my entire adult life and been a member of before my adult life even began. Now, what have the responses been? As you may have noticed, I love a debate. I love discussing ideas, beliefs, not least when they're totally different from my own. So, as you can imagine, I was much looking forward to some of the responses. I wanted some passionate but factually grounded rebuttals, putting me on my toes and making me think long and hard about my own thinking. Well, let's see how that's gone, shall we? Let's start with Chris Bryan, Labour MP and Shadow Minister.
Look, one person who's quit the Labour Party, long-standing, lifelong probably supporter, will show you this headline in The Standard, Owen Jones, to back new movement supporting Greens and independents because he's lost faith in Keir Starmer and the Labour Party to deliver for people.
I was absolutely shocked. You could have blown me over with a feather when Owen Jones left the Labour Party. It was almost as shocking as when Elton John announced that he was gay.
I think Chris Bryan might be being a smidgen sarcastic here. Now, I guess there's different ways of reading this, isn't there? Is he saying, well, given my passionate opposition to slash and burn cuts, that I think we should be asking the booming rich to pay more so we can invest, that I oppose through policies which drive kids into poverty, that I'm opposed to driving young people into debt if they aspire to a university education, that I oppose war crimes and genocide. And given Labour stands on the opposite side of those arguments, no wonder I've quit. Is that what he's getting at? Realistically, I don't think so. I think he's saying, well, this guy wasn't really Labour in the first place. I mean, I'm not sure why in that case, Chris Bryan, who actually started politically as a Conservative, if we're going there, has personally repeatedly asked me for endorsements for his books, including Glamour Boys and Entitled, A History of the British Aristocracy. By the way, that was a decent anti-aristocracy spiel, an indicative of that kind of phenomenon where liberals are perfectly happy to be radical about our nation's past, but not about its present or indeed its future. Having personally asked me for the endorsement, his publishers splashed it on the front cover of his book, presumably on the basis that they thought I'd appeal to an audience and encourage people to buy it. In any case, what does he actually mean, given I joined the Labour Party at the age of 15, have voted for it under every single leader in my 21 years of adult life, and have campaigned for it, ooh, hundreds of times? If I don't qualify as a Labour guy, where's that leave the rest of the country, given that puts me way above the vast majority of people in terms of, what, active commitment to a political party? It's also quite funny, because it's a recurring joke in left-wing circles, often you see it on Twitter, that I'm farcically impossible to peel off as a supporter of Labour. A lot of them thought I just never would do it. So what I would say is it underlines a chronic problem with refusing to engage with my actual arguments. Just so we're clear about my arguments, I argued Keir Starmer dishonestly discarded his leadership platform, in which he made pledges, his word, to tax the rich in order to invest, renationalise key utilities, scratch tuition fees, reverse NHS privatisation. We really could go on. It's a long list. I argued the Tory fiscal rule, which Labour had committed to, combined with the party ruling out increasing taxes on the rich, and even opening up the possibility of slashing taxes on the rich, means a continuation of the austerity which has wrecked public services and the social fabric of this country. I argued Keir Starmer has committed to Tory benefit cuts, which drive huge numbers of children into poverty. I also argued Keir Starmer backed the right of Israel to commit war crimes, cutting off water and energy, sent a load of shallow ministers to defend him on national television on that point, then 2 weeks later claimed he never backed such a right, but in any case, throughout supported an Israeli onslaught, which, based on the very open, declared intention of Israeli leaders and officials from the start, was always going to be genocidal in character. I also argue the current Labour leadership, which came to power promising radical domestic policies in a broad church, has waged a remorseless war against internal dissent. Now, does Chris Bryan want to answer any of these points, instead of pretending that a lifelong Labour supporter who he solicited for help so he could sell books was somehow always secretly some sort of sworn political enemy? Well, he didn't try, because he can't. Because, I would argue, he knows I'm right. Let's listen to another thoughtful contribution, this time from Times columnist and son of former Tory Foreign Secretary Malcolm Rifkind, Hugo Rifkind, on the Centrist podcast, Oh God, What Now? Indeed.
For balance, Owen Jones is no longer endorsing Starmer. Mm. Will this be on the minus column or the plus column for Labour HQ?
It'll make no difference, but that's because Owen hails from a corner of British politics that devotes itself to making no difference. On that basis, I would say it's probably not of huge effect. I'd imagine quite a lot of people were surprised he was still in the Labour Party. I interviewed him.
I said like a year ago, didn't he?
I thought he'd already left.
I interviewed Grace Blakely last week about her new book. Very clever, Grace Blakely. Very interesting book about sort of the collapse of capitalism. And she said something in the interview about how she just left the Labour Party, which went quite viral online. Obviously, I wouldn't suggest for a moment that Owen saw somebody else going viral for this and felt that perhaps now was his time to strike.
Well, if we're talking about do-nothing politics, I mean, this podcast used to be called Remainiacs and was extremely influential on the Remain movement after the referendum had actually happened. Not, didn't exist before. If we're talking about do-nothing, I can't really remember any of them playing a prominent role in the actual referendum campaign when there was actually a chance of stopping Leave from happening. Then after it happened, if Remain had any chance, it would need to win over Leave voters. I'll let you all guess how well those behind a podcast called Remainiacs did in that sense. But we can't all have the stunning political achievements, the doing something of Times columnist Hugo Rifkind under our belt, so I will defer to him on that point. But just listen to what he said there. His suggestion was that I left the party I've been a supporter of before I was even an adult. I would say a fairly significant life decision. What? Because I wanted to trend on Twitter for a day. Is he being serious? If we're going to go there, I trend on Twitter about 3 times a week. It's actually quite annoying. I don't even know why I'm trending half the time. Sometimes I get these WhatsApps from friends going, oh, I see you're trending on Twitter again, Owen. What's happened now? And I'm like, I don't know, a lot of the time. I mean, first off, anyone who knows me knows I find the deluge of stuff I get on social media, abuse, outright threats, just sometimes very tedious people screaming at me, quite mind-numbing. I actually avoided doing what I did on the whole Labour thing for a while because I just couldn't be bothered having to deal with the inevitable shit this kind of thing attracts. More seriously, though, what this shows is just an absolute inability of people like Hugo Rifkin to understand some people just have some principles. I'm not trying to go, oh, look how great I am. You know, you don't have to agree with my principles. Doesn't make me a good person. I just have principles that I believe in. I always have had them. I mean, the view there is that someone on the left couldn't possibly take a stand, even though there are inevitable consequences for the career. It's not good for my career. If you suddenly leave support for one of the two main parties, that's bad for your career in the media ecosystem. I'll be honest about that. He doesn't think that they take a stand because of something they actually believe in. It has to be some sort of ulterior motive based on self-advancement, or indeed attention-seeking. That's his argument, that's attention-seeking. And I do have to ask, to what degree that's projection? If you don't have strong burning principles yourself, which are embedded in your sense of self, my lifelong beliefs in things like public ownership, investment, taxing the rich, workers' rights, freedom for Palestine, you know, they're just part of my sense of self. If you don't have that yourself, then I guess you end up presuming other people don't either, because maybe you're driven by what you think is good for yourself personally, so you think others might be. Now, Hugo might respond there, well, that's getting a bit personal, Owen. Why are you questioning my motives? To which I'd answer, well, that's the problem, isn't it? You brought the conversation down to that level because you were unable to respond to the actual political arguments that I made. And this is the problem you see with the British media and political culture, a total inability to engage in political discussion, turning everything into personality and soap opera. I think it's tragic. Now, to be fair to Hugo, he then identifies the mass slaughter of Gaza, not his words, as a key reason why I left, but suggests this won't have an electoral cost for Starmer. Now, first off, yes, well done, Hugo. Both main parties have backed Israel's onslaught and voters are desperate to get rid of the Tories. So they're going to plump for Labour for that and no other reason. The polling has actually shown Starmer's ratings have been hit by Gaza. He's not taken a popular stance on it. The polling is clear. And he's becoming toxic already amongst natural members of Labour's electoral coalition. You could see that in the Rochdale by-election. And I believe that sets Labour for trouble after they win the inevitable landslide, which I absolutely convinced they'll have because of the massive anti-Tory backlash. When they're in government, they'll quickly become unpopular. Their support is soft and it's been made softer by Gaza. But again, look, the problem is you can see commentators like this, they see everything through the prism of Westminster soap opera. There's no sense of, is it morally right to take a stand? If Labour was backing Putin's invasion of Ukraine, he wouldn't be reducing that to, you know, what's the cost electorally here? he'd be more asking, well, is it the right thing to resign over something like that? And if I was going to go there, I might suggest Hugo, like a lot of my critics, as you'll see, has maybe a bit of a grudge. In this case, because 3 weeks ago, I responded to his column, "Whisper it, but Sir Keir Starmer is having a good war," which began with a line, "No, hear me out, what if Labour's having a good war?" I'll be honest, I thought that was an abhorrent column to write about a genocidal war, and I said so, and he wasn't happy about it. But you see, my objection was political, not personal. It wasn't about Hugo Rifkind. I don't know the guy. I've met him a handful of times in a professional setting. I'm sure his friends like him very much. But like a lot of my so-called colleagues in the media who don't like being called out because of their political positions, which they have, as you'll see, increasingly conflated with abuse and bullying in order to deflect scrutiny. Speaking of which, let's listen to Matthew D'Ancona, my former Guardian colleague.
Do we need to explain who Owen Jones is, people?
I think we should. Owen Jones is a columnist and...
Activist. You've got to say that because it winds him up. If you don't call him a journalist...
Yes.
And just call him an activist, he goes nuts on Twitter.
Yes, YouTube... Imagineer, as they say in the Disney world, who by the way is his nickname at the Guardian is Squealer in honor of the propagandist pig in Animal
From
Farm.
Animal Farm.
No, yeah, so wonderful. I've which is a fun fact.
Lovely stuff there. If my colleagues want to pull the curtain back so the world can hear exactly what kind of environment I have to work in, that's up to them. I didn't do this, did I? I'm just commenting on responses to what I thought was a political contribution. Now, it's true that another colleague popularised the term squealer back in 2018, tweeting out, "Put a sock in it, squealer." I mean, it's not massively grown up, is it? It's not what I would call classic, that person's being a really, really adult about political disagreement. Unfortunately, it was then shared by a very amused, very right-wing blog, and that term ended up being integrated with lots of death threats and threats of violence I get. It is what it is. Not after the sympathy. I'm just saying, you know, squealer is a term which gets bandied around by a range of people, including some people who are, well, take it to, let's just say, the nth degree. Now, I mean, all I'd say is the media is full of commentators who whip up bigotry and racism against marginalised minorities, who support slash and burn cuts, which I think have wrecked the country, cheered on the Tory party with all its raging disgraces. If you're one of the few dissenting voices from the left, well, it seems like you're kind of fair game. You can say what you want about them. I mean, some would say that's pretty basic playground-type bullying. I mean, the Evening Standard this week on that theme had a piece entitled "Jones Leaves the Farm," which said, "The fallout continues after left-wing columnist Owen Jones quit Labour last week. He says he cannot support Sir Keir Starmer's leadership. The move has drawn groans from detractors, including Guardian colleagues, some of whom dredged up an old nickname for him from the Jeremy Corbyn years, Squealer. It's a reference to the propagandising pig in George Orwell's Animal Farm. While the playground insult may have had some currency when Jones was supporting Corbyn, it doesn't make much more sense now Jones has jumped ship. They need to get creative." It's quite funny, actually, isn't it? It's just like, I've got an entire piece in the Evening Standard urging my colleagues to come up with a different term of abuse to describe me. It's quite a... I mean, that's the industry I'm in. I think it's useful. I just think people need to know, because the media is an important part of a democracy. You know, how it functions is important for all of us as citizens. I guess, you know, that kind of behaviour is relevant. So, you know, I think it's important people know the sort of environment you work in if you're on the left.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What I would say is it doesn't show, again, a massive willingness to engage in things I've said. I think it's just because my critics, a lot of them know what I've said is true deep down. They can't rebut it on factual grounds. They know Keir Starmer's leadership picture is dishonest. They know that kind of dishonesty was peddled by, say, if it was peddled by Boris Johnson, they'd be screaming blue murder about it, rightly. They know that Keir Starmer did defend the right of Israel to commit war crimes. And it makes my critics angry for those basic undeniable facts to be said out loud about what they see as their tribe, their faction. They see Starmer as one of their own. They don't really care, many of them, about trivial things like policy and substance. Doesn't really impact their lives. They care about vibes. Now, if we're going to go down the Squealer and Animal Farm route, I mean, that's a book about how a movement started preaching equality until it became indistinguishable from its opponents. Well, that sounds a lot like Keir Starmer's leadership of the Labour Party, doesn't it? Compared to the Conservatives. Pigs looking from pig, you know, suddenly... I mean, it is... It could be a story, I suppose, about how Labour and the Tories became indistinguishable. So maybe that characterisation doesn't apply more to my critics. Anyway, carrying on this theme, let's carry on. I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying the political discussion that I've been treated to. Let's listen to a Keir Starmer supporter on GB News. Interesting choice of channel for them.
Go on, Andy, who's your union jackass?
Union jackass this week is Owen Jones. You know, over the last couple of days, he's quit the Labour Party, you know, to our disappointment, he's quit the Labour Party. He's started off this new, weird, bizarre little faction thing that he's doing. And then he did that dreadful interview with Lewis Goodall. Honestly, I'm even disappointed in myself that I'm giving him more media attention. He's a little kind of Peter Pan wannabe. He needs to get out of our screens. You know what I mean? Really dislike the boy.
Owen Jones
isn't here to defend himself. I would like to just
He's in Neverland.
And still it continues. We normally get you on to offer the balance here when it comes to Labour stuff, and here I am doing it. But there we go. Right, well, apparently Owen Jones is a strong contender.
Again, great to hear someone engaging with the issues, with my arguments. So he teases me as his union jackass. Not pure Al. I'm glad this is a really sensible grown-up channel to engage with. His right-wing panellists, including Carol Malone, Google her for her back catalogue. Make sure you put on a hazmat suit before you start reading it, though. They weep with pleasure. He's delighted by that. Look at his little face. Really chuffed. Yay, I've slagged off this lefty on GB News and a load of right-wingers are cheering me on. I think it's a good visual metaphor. I think this lot are perfectly happy getting kudos from the right as they attack the left. Fine. What's his substantive criticism? I'm a kind of Peter Pan wannabe. Kind of tricky to kind of work out where he's coming from there, to be honest. I mean, I get the gist is something to do with me looking young. I actually think I'm probably a lot older than that guy. But, I mean, a lot of criticism ever since I appeared in the media has centred on what some see as my, I think, kind of offensively youthful face. Some people seem quite angry about it. I'll be honest, in my 20s, I hated that. It really wound me up. When I went on Question Time, I was like, I want to make serious political points. And then people would be like, does his mum know he's up this late? Shouldn't he be doing his paper round? Lol. Those jokes never got old. Kind of like my face, I guess. But people said to me at the time, you're going to be so relieved when you get older hearing that kind of stuff. And given I'm now pushing 40, it's a case of, oh no, please don't riff off me looking young. He says I'm in Neverland. It's just weird. Just weird, odd. I just think if he's also implying I'm infantile, I don't know, where does it leave segments like that? Do you know what I mean? It's just not... It's not very... Again, is it grown up? I mean, it's not... Not really engaging again with anything I've said, to put it gently. Next up, an entire column in the Sunday Times devoted to yours truly. Now, I would say that's weird, but I read so many columns about me in various media outlets over the years. Incessant. I don't know how many have basically featured me as a core subject. And it is weird because at the end of the day, I really am just a newspaper columnist. I'm just a writer. I write books, I write for a newspaper, and I do videos. You know, I don't have any power in the country. I don't run anything. It's extremely rare for any other newspaper columnist to have anything written about them at all. I would not be allowed to write long articles about newspaper columnists in that way. I'm not getting a tiny violin out there. I just have been made an exception. It is what it is. It always has been. Now, you might think, well, maybe it's because you actually are an evil and terrible exception compared to the veritable angels who work as columnists in Britain. It's not actually about me. It's just how the left's treated within the British media. The left is seen and portrayed as dangerous, extreme, hateful, and just not legitimate political actors. I'll come on to that. Now, the Sunday Times column is entitled, "Was Owen Jones a Once Bold Thinker Warped by Social Media?" Yeah, warped. That's me all over. I won't name the author because they follow a rule which is followed by many of my colleagues in the media, which goes like this. They can say virtually anything they want about me, including, as it turns out, being paid whatever sum of money they're paid by the Murdoch Empire to churn this stuff out. I don't think it's massively dignified. You know, I'm frightened to know how much they got for it, or how much I've made columnists over the years who've pitched articles ranting about me. But if I respond in any way, that's bullying or abuse. To the point where if literally I reply to someone who attacks me or twists something I've said and defend myself, they go, pile on. It's worse than that. Some people criticise me and I don't respond. And then other people say, well, that's not true. Well, that's not what he said, and take them on. And then they accuse me of piling on them, even though I've not said anything, because I'm responsible for anyone who they claim is my followers, as though I'm basically like this kind of demonic figure who's like a puppet master who's in charge of all these people who can't think for themselves. Now, anyway, the article suggested that supposedly earlier incarnation of myself could be authentically be described as a breath of fresh air, that I was strident but thought-provoking, asking serious questions about class representation in the media and the dominance of elites in British life. It's not, I have to say, how I recall the way I was treated and seen. I've always been treated as a bit of an interloper. Before 2015, the left wasn't seen as a significant political movement, though. So after that, a lot of people who regarded themselves as centrist and moderate got very radicalised and angry about the left, to the point where, you know, it kind of became a lot of their personalities, to be honest. They don't like or didn't like being criticised by that left, particularly on social media, and got actually very angry and certainly very annoyed about it. Even after the 2019 general election, they just presumed that the left would just go away. Firstly, they'd beg for forgiveness and then go and find a ditch and die and never be heard of again. They were like, we defeated them. They're gone. We don't need to deal with these people anymore. And that didn't happen. And they're kind of annoyed about it. They're like, why do we still have to listen to you? Why do you still exist? You're all supposed to be dead, politically speaking. The unfortunate truth for them is because there's just a lot of people in British society who do believe in the things we do. We do actually have a large audience for the things we talk about. You can see with Navarra Media, the number of people they reach. And part of the objection we all get is this kind of Schrodinger's left phenomenon, which is that the left is simultaneously just totally irrelevant and can be ignored, but also has this huge army of support, which is intimidating. Now, anyway, the column says, today is a different matter. Jones remains a significant figure with more than 1 million followers on Twitter and the ability to shape the online debate. Goes on to say, and yet within Labour circles, the most common private reaction to Jones's highly staged announcement was shrugging surprise that he was still affiliated with the party. I love this kind of highly staged announcement thing. What does it mean? I didn't wake up in the morning and do it. No, that would be weird. Yeah, I did put some thought into the column I wrote about my decision, the video I did about it. It'd be weird if I didn't, if I just abandoned lifelong support for party on a whim. I mean, you know, we're back to this. Well, surprise, he was still in affiliated to the party. I mean, I'm a lifelong supporter. I mean, I voted for Labour under Tony Blair. Anyway, it goes on. He might be able to summon an online mob with a single tweet, but the Jones band has been sullied by long service in the trenches of the culture wars. Once hailed as the voice of a generation, more than a decade of Twitter spats has made him a darker, angrier, and less interesting public figure. So this individual, who I won't name because, again, it'll end up in private eye. It probably still will. We'll go on to that. Because it is indicative of the ludicrousness of this entire narrative. The journalist has said, just for context, virtually nothing about Israel's mass slaughter of Gaza and has refused to oppose it, but has said a lot condemning opponents of this slaughter. Now, they went in hard on the idea that the slogan, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, is genocidal. I don't believe that, and I strongly object to that claim. That's not how the vast majority of people use it at all. It's a call for civil rights for Palestinians who are deprived of it, from the river to the sea. Now, it's notable that the founding charter of Likud, which is the ruling party of Israel, uses almost the same formulation of from the river to the sea in terms of there only being one state, Israel, existing there. It's been used by the Israeli ambassador of the UK in the same way. Now, we know how they mean it in practice because we can see it in practice. Apartheid, occupation, siege, and now genocide. Now, this same journalist hasn't spent time condemning that or the multiple genocidal utterances of Israeli ministers and officials as they commit genocide. Instead, they just go on about the critics of Israel's genocidal war. Now, British Palestinian called Hamid, who I follow, challenged them on this. And this journalist quote tweeted them saying it was explicitly and avowedly a call for genocide by a terrorist group who murdered more than 1,000 civilians, adding, "You snivelling apologists." As it happens, this British Palestinian is an opponent of Hamas and has condemned their war crimes. Now, I objected to a journalist dogpiling abusively on a British Palestinian while Palestine suffers a genocidal onslaught. Imagine a journalist had dogpiled a British Ukrainian, for example. So I responded that the said journalist that this was a vile response. And I said they had almost nothing to say about the mass slaughter of thousands of Palestinians, adding, so they hunt for evidence its opponents are the real moral disgraces. They complained about this. It was also written up by one of their personal friends in private eye, suggesting it was me who was in violation of social media guidelines. It's funny because in this Sunday Times piece, the article suggests I've become thinner skinned. Well, the British Palestinian citizen who was targeted understandably said he found this whole episode to be racist and unprofessional and believed it summed up the media's contempt for Palestinian people. Well, I strongly agree. And I think that was the point, the key point that needs to be made there. So in the article, the journalist says to clash with him on the site is to be barraged by personal abuse by his legion of followers, as I've learned firsthand on several occasions. I do think just doing long columns about Twitter beef, I mean, there really are people dying out there. But what this normally means is the journalist has said something criticising me, often very passionately, and I've responded. So last week he called me irrelevant. So irrelevant, as you can see, he's written an entire Sunday Times column about me. But you see, the rules are my critics in the media can say anything and everything they want about me, which they do. You don't get columnists criticising that same way. Again, if you consider the views of many British columnists, that's quite something. I mean, the Times newspaper, this is a Sunday Times, but their sister papers, employs Giles Corran, who actively celebrated the death of Dawn Foster, a young working class leftist woman who works in the British media. I knew her well because she had once made the cardinal sin of referring to the fact it comes from a privileged family. The Corrans, of course, famous family. So when she died, he wrote, "Fuck off, onto hell, now where you belong." Another tweet in which he added, "Ha ha 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 ha." I'm not joking. That was what happened. Virtually no other journalist said anything about it, not even talking about all the journalists who said horrific things all the time about various marginalised minorities. Now, the point is, within the British media, it's seen as unacceptable to call out, I guess, public media figures who are on the right or in the centre for their politics. That's abusive. Unless they're left-wing, in which case, fill your boots. So to finish, look, I would love a good political discussion about the arguments and the issues, and it's not on offer. And I think that's actually a real shame. And I think it's bad for our democracy because we can't have proper discussion debates about crucial issues to do with the future of our country and the world, including on matters of life and death. And to coin a phrase, we deserve better. Please like and subscribe. Share this video if you want. I'd love to hear your thoughts about the British media, which is what this is obviously about. Keep sharing the road at patreon.com/unjones84. I'll speak to you soon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.